This is the TSN MMA show with Aaron Bronstetter and Bazooka Joe Valtellini.
A new heavyweight contender is born. The UFC heads to Liverpool for the first time, and Darren Till will headline in his backyard. But against who? We'll find out. Francis Ngannou reappears. A top Canadian prospect falls while another extends his win streak. And we are joined by Jim Edwards from MMAKnit.com, a colleague of mine from the other side of the pond, who will discuss all things UFC in the United Kingdom. And thanks to those listening on TSN Radio in Toronto and Ottawa or to the podcast. Please tell your friends, review the show, and subscribe. Joe, you were out in Montreal this past weekend. Your fighter did really well. Tariq Ismail is right.
Tariq Ismail, yeah. The Desert Storm. And he looked good. Very impressive. This was our first time working together. But he looked awesome. He showcased, you know, good striking, which I was happy about. And I guess everyone who fights him is going to be ready for those low kicks. And we got to bash up this guy's legs, and then we did some good work with our elbows. So, well done, Tariq. I'm excited to see Bazooka kickboxing and striking in MMA. So, next stop for us, hopefully a few more fights, and we'll see us in the UFC, and we'll be talking about us.
Yeah, so we'll see how that goes. Obviously, with that particular fight, his opponent's legs were torn up, 2 minutes into the first round.
That's Bazooka-style kickboxing. So, it was really good. Good timing, good everything. His striking, he's a three-sport athlete. So, you know, he's been a part of combat sports for some time. He's fought professional Muay Thai. He had a professional boxing fight. And now he's, you know, professional MMA at 3-0. So I expect big things from him. So I'm very excited. And I just posted a little clip on my Instagram. So check it out if you see it. Very, very savage. Just a pure savage with his striking.
Yeah, absolutely. If you have Fight Pass as well, you can watch it from this past weekend. It was the TKO event, and he was fighting on the undercard. The first thing I said to you, Joe, when you came in, I said, did you watch Tom Dukinwa's fight at UFC Fight Night in London? Yeah. I said it looked like he was implementing some Bazooka kickboxing.
Yeah, he was definitely watching the tutorials on YouTube, but no, he looked good. Dukinwa was awesome. And as soon as I saw his style and his ability to switch stance and attack the legs, I'm like, yeah, this guy, he's good. He knows what he's doing. And I remember what I told you. I was like, he's a less quality version of the Bazooka Joe, but overall pretty good for Dukinwa. It would be awesome to get to train him, put a little power behind some of his strikes a little bit more, and more threat with his hands. But overall, showing good low kicks in MMA. I love to see it.
Yeah, he trains in France. He was training at Jackson's MMA for the last fight, decided to do his whole camp in France this time around with a little bit of, I guess, consultation from the Jackson camp over the phone. But yeah, I think that you should reach out to him. I think that he could learn a thing or two.
Yeah, French
kickboxing
is awesome,
what he's really good at.
Yeah. And I'm going to France May 12th, so maybe we can invite him out. It'd be cool to a glory event.
Or you can go out to him, go to his gym, and show him a trick or two.
Yeah, hurt his legs a little bit.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe.
I mean, you are bigger than him.
Yeah, no.
I don't know if he would let you. That's why I say maybe.
No, he's good. Very, very good. I'm very impressed with it. I love seeing guys who can really implement good striking, and I mean, especially French kickboxing is incredible. They have one of the longest histories in combat sports. They have a form of kickboxing called savate, which they really good French kickbox, and that's why Glory goes like two times a year, because it's just the talent there is incredible.
Mm-hmm. Doumbé, of course.
Cedric Doumbé is
utilizes
really good.
That, yeah.
Dylan Salvador, Fabio Pinca. We have a lot of great, great guys from there. And our champion, Anissa Mexen, from there, from the female division. So a lot of really good, high-quality French fighters.
Yeah, you know what? That card this weekend was really good. I thought that there was a lot to glean from it. Obviously, Volkov winning is a big deal, because there are all these new young guys in the division. I mean, Volkov is 29, which is young by heavyweight standards in the UFC. But then you've also got, you know, I put out a tweet. I said, you got Volkov, you got Curtis Blaydes, you got Tai Tuivasa, you've got all these new up-and-coming heavyweights that are young. And then people were like, what about Francis? What about Francis? And I was thinking, I responded to them by saying I was thinking of people under 30. But in my mind, I was like, I completely forgot Francis. Like, Francis is still part of that next wave of heavyweights. And the reason I think I forgot Francis is because he's been radio silent up until today. He was on the MMA Hour earlier today.
We haven't really heard much.
Yeah, because we haven't heard much. He said he had rewatched some of the fight with Stipe, but couldn't get through it because he was so disappointed with how poorly he performed.
Yeah, like, that happens. You know. That definitely happens.
He says he will eventually watch it all.
It takes time. It actually, like, a lot of my, like, my Nicky Holtzkin loss, I had a hard time watching it. It took me a while before I rewatched it. Usually when you win, you go right away, you'll go back to the whole time watch it. With losses, you kind of just forget about it sometimes. You don't want to watch it, and then eventually you go back, and then you'll peek at it, and you're like, you get mad. So that's a true martial artist way of looking at it, but he knows what he did wrong. He doesn't need to be reminded.
Yeah, when was the last time you watched that fight?
I watched it again recently, I think about a month ago. I think it was...
What drove you to watch it?
I don't know, just randomly. Sometimes I like to go on and just be reminded on some of the success from my career, and because sometimes you forget, and it's nice to reflect on your career and look back at all my success. And I just watched it again. It was Glory posted some of their greatest moments, and I think mine and Nikki's fight made one of the top 50 Glory moments. And then that moment was like, I should watch it again. And then I watched it, of course, got upset because I was so young at that point. I was like, I should have done this, and a million other things. So it was frustrating to watch. But every time I watch it, I'll find a million things that I could improve on.
How many of your moments were in the Glory top 50? Four?
It should have been more. I think only one.
Only one?
Yeah, only
one. But your Daniels fight had to have been in there,
no,
too.
They didn't put it. They
really?
Didn't put it, which was...
They just put your loss?
Which was shocking. I think the moment should have been, for me, is that whole tournament for me. And that night, I got... That knockout with Daniels was one of the knockouts of, the year of that year. And I got a fight of the night in one night. So a knockout, one of the top knockouts of the year.
You hadn't been kickboxing for that long
and
either.
And I haven't been kickboxing. No one knew who I was.
Fire. Yeah.
I thought that was the bigger moment, but I didn't make them.
Yeah, you didn't make the list.
Otherwise, the person
that made the list joined late and didn't
get
to see
the early stuff. Yeah, it was my producer who made the list. I got to give him a talk.
Yeah, exactly.
Or come on.
Yeah, show him a thing or two. Watch the tape back with him and say, come on, you can't tell me that this moment's better than that.
Come on. Yeah, there's a lot of them, but I mean, it's all right. I'm still the fact that I'm there talking, and it was pretty cool that cool what they did for me at Glory 50 when they had their ceremonial milestone show. The show opened with the first time we ever went to Chicago was Glory 11, and I got to be on that card, so the open of the show had it. So I got my respect.
Well, here's the thing with Francis that I'm curious about. Like, given the way that he lost to Stipe, do you feel like it's going to be really hard for him to win a championship if people, if he's not able to correct his wrestling, and if people, like, if that's what Francis Ngannou is, a guy who can knock anybody out but has a little bit of trouble stuffing takedowns and can't do much off of his back, does he have any shot? I mean, he can always stay at the top, the top, but does he have any chance of becoming a champion? Do you think people have written him off because of his performance in that fight?
I don't know if they wrote him off, but you got to think, there's so much behind wrestling and jiu-jitsu, and you can't learn it that quickly. I mean, really, based on his age, what do you know? What's it, 30?
31.
31? Yeah, yeah. I was going to say 31, 32. But at that age, how much can you really learn? The guys that are gonna take him down would have been wrestling since they were kids. So I don't think he could make up that much time in wrestling to be able to be that successful. But what he has is power. If he hits you, and everybody's scared of that. So a lot of wrestlers might be scared, and he's going to beat a lot of great wrestlers. But I think you're right. I think it's going to be harder for him to really solidify that championship belt because guys are too – they have too many tools. They can't just rely on one thing, and that's what Stipe, was able to show. You need to be well-rounded mixed martial artist.
Well, two guys that have called him out that I think are good matchups for him are Mark Hunt, who called him out yesterday,
and Derek Lewis.
Yeah. Yeah, if you put him against either of those guys, it'll be a very good test for where he's at right now. Because I think, if you would have done that before the Stipe fight, he would have been a 3 or 4 to 1 favorite against both those guys.
Yeah, I think he beats both of those guys.
I do, too. But that being said, if Derek Lewis gets on top of him, it could be a long night. Because Derek Lewis has, I would say, the best ground and pound at heavyweight. And unless I'm forgetting somebody, and I very well could be, because...
Derek
Lewis, a deep roster.
I wasn't impressed with Lewis on the ground last time. He looked really tired. He kind of laid on his back a little bit.
I'm thinking from top control.
Okay.
Can he get on top of Francis? But the thing about Francis is he's very explosive and strong.
Yeah.
So when Stipe was getting on top of him early in the fight,
he was able to push
and
off.
Given that this would be a 3-round fight, like, Francis was able to just use sheer strength to keep off his back. And Stipe's a far better wrestler than a Derek Lewis.
Yeah. I think it's going to be a really stalemate fight. A lot of guys are going to be scared, both very powerful guys. Nobody wants to take the chance. I don't know. I think it's I really like Francis in this fight. I think his wrestling at this point of his career is just going to always be lacking.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see when he comes back. I didn't get to watch the full interview with Ariel earlier as to when he's targeting a return, but I would imagine it's probably sometime in the summer. And if the UFC were smart, they should throw him on that UFC 226 card. Just have him there because if one of Cormier or Stipe falls out with an injury, you've got him locked and loaded.
Yeah.
And then of course if that's going to be your biggest audience, you want to keep Francis relevant in the public eye. That's a good fight to put him on also.
Yeah. I just think Stipe was just too well rounded. I mean, I think Francis still needs to be built up properly. He's still inexperienced. We have to build them up. Give them these strikers at first. Give them, you know, moderate wrestlers, and then let's build them up properly, because he does have the potential to be a huge star, but not when you get him good wrestlers. So I think he still needs to be strategic in who we put him against.
Absolutely. Well, there's a lot of moving parts right now in that heavyweight division. At UFC 225, you'll have Curtis Blaydes and Alistair Overeem, and then you'll have Tai Tuivasa against Alistair Overeem, who's coming off of a win against Stefan Struve. So a lot of old versus new in the heavyweight division. But I'm excited for all of these guys, like especially if those two guys are successful, Tai Tuivasa and Curtis Blaydes, you're going to see a changing of the guard in the heavyweight division. I mean, Stipe is still relatively young and can stay up at the top. I don't know how young he is. I think he's like 34 or something along those lines.
Yeah.
He might even be my age, which would mean he's kind of older in terms of athletics. I don't consider myself to be an old guy, but I think that it's interesting to see where that division is going to go. And I think that there are a lot of really, for the first time in a long time, that heavyweight division is refreshed. Now, on the flip side of that, the light heavyweight division, you had Jan Blachowicz versus Jimmy Manuwa for that co-main event. And now Jan Blachowicz is going to be a top five light heavyweight this week, which says a lot about that division.
Yeah, very weak. But, he showed a lot of heart. I mean, took a lot of good shots, stayed in there, fought well. So, but, I don't know, top five? Questionable.
Well, I mean, from a ranking standpoint, he will be. But that just goes to show how that division's shaping up right now.
Yeah, but I also wasn't overly impressed with Manuwa either.
Me neither. I thought that Blachowicz actually played right into what Manoa's strengths were. He was standing and trading with him, which you don't want to do with Manuwa. You want to try to take him down, and Blachowicz was able to take him down when he tried to.
Yep.
So it was surprising to me that he basically beat Manuwa at his own game.
Yeah, Manuwa's really one-dimensional. If he can't land his power, he doesn't have much after that. Like, he's walking right into straight punches and jabs, and he's counting too much on that left hook. And, you know, Jan was able to create distance, create space, stay outside of the power punching and do work. Like, it was good and impressive in that way, but just think Manuwa's too one-dimensional.
I think Blachowicz going up against the cage was smart, too, because you take away the explosiveness of Manuwa's strikes. By sitting back.
Yeah, he pulls him in. You can't just get aggressive on that and expose your chin. So you have to wait. You have to bait Manuwa in, you know, use your jab and wait for that counter. And then once he counters with that hook, you need to counter that hook, because Manuwa's only going to throw in ones or twos. He's not going to put combinations together. So the strategy to beat someone like Manuwa is pretty, you know, easy. But you got to remember, everyone has a plan, like Mike Tyson says, until you get punched in the face. And that's what Manuwa brings. But if he doesn't land it, he's got nothing. He's got really nothing. It was disappointing.
Yeah, well, the Canadians on the card, mixed bag. Cajun Johnson wins a split decision. I had it scored 29-28 for him, and I thought it was a very good fight. Although probably the most boring fight on the card.
Yeah.
But that just says more about this card. This was a great card.
Yeah.
And I don't want to call a fight boring. It was a very technical fight.
Yeah.
And I thought that, you know, from a viewer standpoint at home, it was actually a pretty good fight and an interesting one to watch.
Now, what do you take with, because I know he came out in his post-fight interview about asking about, you know, crowds booing, you know, and one of the journalists made a point saying that, you know, you pay your money as a fan, and in any form of entertainment, you cheer or you boo based on what you think's exciting. So what do you think of fans booing?
Well, let me ask you a question. Have you seen the movie Transformers 2?
No.
Or any of the Transformers movies?
Maybe one of them, but I'm not a fan of the Marvels and the Transformers.
It was a very, very high budget movie. Okay. Thousands of people worked on it.
Mm-hmm.
It was a bad movie.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. If you worked on it and you were in the special effects, I'm sure the special effects looked great.
Yeah.
You did a good job. But, and I mean, Cajun Johnson did a good job. And I didn't think it was a boring fight, and I would not have booed after that fight. But, you know, Transformers, it was a bad movie.
Yeah.
And I can say that and not even think about the people, the 1,000 plus people that worked on that movie. It's an afterthought to me.
Yeah.
If you're a consumer, mm-hmm. you're paying for something, you have, in my opinion, the right to react to it however you'd like. Now, the people are different. Every person's different. There are people that would go to a fight and wouldn't boo it because they respect what these guys are doing. I'm sure there are people that were not booing. There are people that boo because they disagree with the decision.
Yep.
And there are people that boo because they didn't like the fight. Now, Cajun reacted to the boos as if they were booing the fight, when I do think a lot of them were booing the decision.
Yeah, I think you're right. It was mostly based on the decision.
But, you know, I do feel like they have a point to say, you know, listen, we just put it all out there for you guys. We could have gotten knocked out, had our brains rattled, and you guys are booing us, which is when you think of it that way, it's very impolite. But at the same time, you're a paying customer. You probably have a couple beers in you.
Yeah.
And you're just going to react how you react because it's a sporting event and that's just how it goes.
It's hard to say because, I mean, initially I thought once I thought people ask me, oh, what do you think about Bourne? I'm like, it's terrible. You need to respect the athlete. But when you look at it and you see that people are paying for something and the way you put it, yeah, you kind of it.
There's just
is
a lot of variables. There's just a lot of variables that you have to take into account. Like from a very base level, I think it's disrespectful.
Yeah,
but I also think that there are certain things you just need to take into account if you're judging everybody in that arena who's booing.
Yeah, but even there's times even with me as I pride myself in being this martial artist. There's times fights are on and I'm with friends and I'm like boo and I'm booing myself because I'm like it was boring. Like guys. Sometimes guys need to just commit a little bit more. They need to lay it out there. It is an entertainment sport. And I, again, in my career, you watch any one of my fights, and I can guarantee you won't say any of them are boring. Right? Why? Because of my style. I'm here to entertain. I'm here to put on a show. So there is the showman aspect that a lot of people need to understand and fighters need to understand as well. And I always tell my fighters, you can win 1,000 boring decisions and be undefeated and never get called from the UFC. But you can win 5 in a row being spectacular knockouts, and there's your into the UFC rather than the 1,000 decisions that you're going to win. So entertainment plays in the sport. So fighters need to play that and gain fans and popularity that way.
Well, I'm going to get sanctimonious here for a second and say that ever since, I was... After being a kid, pretty much, or maybe after my teenage years, maybe beyond the age of 15, I have never booed at a sporting event since then. I just don't, I think it's, first of all, I think the tribalism in sports is ridiculous, but that's a whole other conversation. I think that cheering for one team, you're basically setting yourself up for disappointment, but I get that people want to back their city and all that. But at the same time, these guys are athletes, they're working hard, they're trying to win a game. I think booing them, you're basically diminishing their accomplishment. But at the same time, I do understand why people boo.
Yeah. But again, you're booing the performance, not necessarily them, right?
Yeah, but the performance is them. It's part
of them. But it's going to bring up the Woodley and Thompson fight.
I booed at a concert before.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And?
I booed Weezer.
I don't even know who that is.
Come on, you don't know who Weezer is?
What is it, like the...
The band Weezer.
I don't think so. Sing something for me.
What's their big Weezer song? Buddy Holly. What's with these homies dissing my girl?
I gotta hear it.
Come on, Joe.
I'm not a music guy.
Yeah,
when you're listening to music, I was training.
What year are you born?
1985.
Yeah, so you would have been like during Weezer's peak. You would have been like at the age of consuming music. You would have been like, I don't know, 13.
No, I was. You're into like Euro dance music and hip hops and Biggie and Tupac.
Okay,
and
well then rock probably was not.
Rock was not my thing. Rock.
Okay. Well, I booed them because they wouldn't play any songs from the album I thought was their best album.
Okay, fair.
Yeah.
And then since then, no more booing?
Yeah, absolutely. Since then, no more booing. But I actually thought that booing them was warranted in that situation.
Yeah,
you're not playing songs from your best album, and I'm paying money to see you?
Yeah,
not
fair.
Thrilled. I think I've also booed bands, it's only bands, I think. I've booed bands that play too short of a set.
Yeah.
Like if I paid good money
and they don't come out
for an encore. Maybe I don't even boo them in that case, but now we're going off on a major tangent here. But I thought that this card was particularly good. I thought that it really over-delivered. And the one thing that really caught my eye after the fact was the O2 Arena in London. Like, this was the second highest grossing UFC card of the year behind UFC 220.
Yeah.
Like, it drew over $2 million at the box office, sold out pretty much O2
Attendance
Arena.
Attendance was what over? I think you're...
It was over 16,000.
I was going to say, your tweet had over 16,000,
And we're talking about an event that, on paper, does not look all that appealing. So this is now a market that the UFC can capitalize on. They can just go and bring whatever they want to the O2 Arena.
It was kind of like what Toronto was at one point, probably. Because Toronto was the hot spot,
But Toronto, when they started bringing cars that didn't have GSP as headliners and...
They slowed down.
It slowed down. Yeah, the sales slowed down. And same within Montreal, when they had Talos Latas versus Anderson Silva.
I was at that one. Yeah,
it wasn't sold out.
Yeah.
There were tickets available.
We could have booed that fight.
I wouldn't boo that fight.
They didn't really do anything. Anderson let him off though the whole time.
I watched that fight. That's the only fight I've watched with my wife for any length of time because she doesn't like the violent aspect of the sport. And I was explaining to her what was going on.
They didn't really do anything.
And she was like, I really understand this. She was like captivated by the strategy of why Latus wanted to bring him to the ground because Latus kept going to his back. Remember, he kept going to his back and trying to get Anderson to go down. And then when they stood up, Anderson was trying to pick him apart. And Anderson was kind of clowning him.
Like,
and my wife was watching it, and she's like, oh, I understand. Like, she understood kind of the chess match aspect of it and was, like, kind of captivated. And most people think that was, like, one of the worst title fights ever.
Yeah, because Silva didn't want to finish. We were like, okay, finish him. Like, you know, like, your countryman, and they didn't want to hurt his friend almost, it looked like.
Yeah, I don't
know. A main event, I paid my money.
I thought that Talos had a smart game plan. Like, what would be the point? Talos, at that point in his career, his striking was not where it is now.
Yeah.
Like, he was just trying to bait him into like a jiu-jitsu match where he knew he'd have an advantage.
Yeah, but if Anderson's controlling the fight and he's just going to sit there, he's got to get up and do something, commit. And in my case, it's Silva's got to put him out then.
Yeah. And you've also got to know if you're late, you're not going to win. If you've done that for three rounds and you're down on the cards,
you might as well make it exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Boo.
were you booing?
I don't know. I was young at that point.
Yeah,
who knows? Probably.
Yeah. All right. So we can put a bow on that card. But one thing I do want to mention is that the UFC announced they're going to be doing a card in Liverpool, England.
Yep.
Headlined by Darren Till versus TBD. And now, if you've never heard of TBD, he's an excellent fighter. That's his nickname. It's like GSP.
Yeah,
no, it's to be determined. So we don't know who it's going to be yet. Dave Shaw. Is one of the VPs, nice Canadian guy for the UFC, said that he thinks that it's going to be announced within a week or so who the opponent's going to be.
You have predictions?
I don't, because if you look at the division and you look up the ladder, like, I don't know, like, I would like to guess Ponzinibbio, but Ponzinibbio, if they don't have him headlining that card in Chile, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah,
do you put him as a
ranked opponent though?
Till says he wants to fight someone ranked above him. But let's pull up the rankings here. So I'm going to...
Yeah, I'm here right now.
Jim Edwards, who we have later on the show, he has an article on MMANYTT.com that you should check out. It's MMANYTT.com. It's a Swedish... It's the, I guess, non-Swedish version of a Swedish MMA website. But he has basically a list of all the people that were in consideration and what the deal is. So one guy's Masvidal... Masvidal's ranked sixth. Masvidal says he's interested in the fight, but he can't do it until July because of injuries. Maya's in the mix. I think Maya could work, but you're not going to really get a good action fight.
Yeah, no, I'm not into
Maya.
That.
Lawler tore his ACL, and I think his ACL and PCL, so I don't see him coming back for the foreseeable future. Covington is interesting because if you pay Colby Covington, that would be a great fight because of the lead-up.
Yeah.
Colby would be calling him all kinds of names and ripping
I think it's a bad fight for
Liverpool.
Colby, though. It's a
I
bad
don't.
You don't think
no,
so?
I
you
don't
think the
so.
Wrestling is...
I don't think Till's wrestling's been tested enough. And Covington's like a high-level NCAA wrestler.
He got hit a lot in his last fight.
He did get hit a lot, but I think that he got hit a lot because he was willing to trade with a guy like Maya. A guy like Till, he's going to be trying to take down the whole fight.
Yeah, but you got to come in to a guy who knows how to keep distance. His counter-striking's really good.
Yeah.
It's a tough
for
fight.
Sure. RDA, I don't think he's going to fight unless it's for the title for Woodley. He's... You know, the next guy in line, pretty much definitively. So unless the UFC says, listen, you're taking this fight, or else you're not going to get the title shot, maybe he takes it, but I don't see that happening. Stephen Thompson, his dad's been saying that he's about 60 or 70% right now and isn't interested in the fight.
What about Masvidal? You missed him.
Masvidal, I mentioned. Masvidal said he's interested in the fight, but doesn't want to do it till July because he's got some injuries.
So then you got to probably go below Till.
Yeah, if you go below
Kamaru
Till,
Usman
doesn't have anything lined up. I don't know if that would be a good matchup for Till, but that would be a fun fight to watch. Ponzinibbio, I think, will be headlining Chile. I think Neil Magny has something lined up, if I'm not mistaken. But if not, that could be an interesting one, too. Cerrone, he beat. Carlos Condit is lined up with Matt Brown. And Gunnar Nelson's a name that's been tossed around that Darren Till said he was somewhat interested in. Now, Leon Edwards, who's ranked 15th, is almost certainly going to move up a spot or two. So if he's able to get ahead of Kim or Gunnar Nelson, maybe that fight is what happens.
He called Till out, right?
Yeah, he called him out. So there's a lot of moving parts in his welterweight division, but it's kind of risky for the UFC to say it's going to be Darren Till versus TBD because what if nobody accepts?
Yeah.
You know, like, you're going to have to get somebody in there, obviously, but
I don't know. You got to think, like, with Colby and Till, they had such high momentum, and then it just died really quickly. I found the UFC didn't, match them quick enough.
Right.
It seems like we let the heat die a little bit, and now all of a sudden it seems like we're just playing catch-up.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I mean, Covington, to me, is a choice that makes sense for both guys. I think that Covington needs to know that Dos Anjos is ahead of him.
Yeah, I like it.
And that's the fight. Like, I also just think that he could make that fight huge, and he could be such a heel in Liverpool. The fans in Liverpool will kill him.
Oh, yeah.
They'll be booing him like crazy if he calls out the UK. Like, that would be a big, high-magnitude fight.
Yeah, yeah. He'll have Brazil and the UK all hating him.
Yeah.
Nice
for sure.
Yeah. He'll be hated everywhere.
Yeah, so we'll see how that goes. But
I like that fight.
That, to me, is interesting. So that fight's going to be taking place in Liverpool. It was a big announcement over the weekend, obviously, with the card in London. And to me, there's nobody better to discuss what this means than Jim Edwards. Jim Edwards writes for MMANit.com, as I mentioned, and he really has his finger on the pulse of everything going on in the UK. He goes to all the Cage Warriors events and really anything regional going on in Europe, he goes, whether it's in Poland or anywhere else. And that's what he does. He's also goes to the big North American cards I'll be seeing in Brooklyn in a couple of weeks. So I want to introduce Jim and discuss the other side of the pond, what's going on in European MMA. And he joins us now on the TSN MMA show.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to introduce this week's guest.
I'm pleased to be joined now by my friend, my colleague from MMANit.com, a person who I believe has his finger on the pulse of the UK scene in terms of MMA. I've covered many events with him and consider him a friend. He's a good dude. Jim Edwards joins us now on the TSN MMA show. How are you, Jim?
Yeah, I'm very well. Thanks, Aaron. Thanks. It's been an eventful weekend, and I'm glad to be joining you. We can talk about it in much detail.
Yes, absolutely. It seems like things are really picking up in the UK. Obviously, Bisping is the biggest star that's come out of the UK. But right now, when you see the aura around someone like Darren Till, do you get a similar vibe?
Yeah, very much so. I think if we rewind a few months up when UFC London was being put together, there was a lot of clamor around the desire to see Michael Bisping or Darren Till on that card. And the fact that they weren't on there was met with a lot of disappointment. But both those guys were down on the ground here in London this week, and they both had a lot of interactions with the fans, and thankfully the fans without them were treated to a fantastic fight card there. There's really a bit of momentum, I guess, building up, I think, on the UK mixed martial arts scene at the moment. A lot of that is down to Darren Till, but there's certainly a lot of other players in the background as well, certainly backing him up.
Well, the O2 Arena seems like just a lock for the UFC if you want to sell tickets and get a good gate, because that card, which aired on Fight Pass, didn't really have any big names on it, aside from Verdum, former heavyweight champion, who I don't know if he has any appeal to the UK fans outside of just being a good fighter, did really well at the gate and at the box office. Looked like it was sold out or near sold out, over $2 million US gate. Is that what it's going to be like anytime they go to O2?
Well, I think this was kind of the litmus test for that. I mean, as I said, there was a lot of people, especially on, from the UK fans, were very unhappy with the way the card was kind of being, every single fight announcement that came out, it was almost like, they're extremely disappointed with what they were being served. And, as a person that has to kind of deal with these people and their anger, I say to these guys, like, look, if you're not happy with the product, you have to act on it and not buy a ticket. And again, the UFC probably served up one of the poorest fight cards that they've ever brought to the UK market. Yet again, like you were saying there, over $2 million on the gate, 16,000 people packed in the O2. It was a 10-fight fight card in the end, with two fights removed, 24 hours out.
Yeah, 24 minutes out in one case.
Well, there you go. I mean, it was crazy. And like, still fans came to the arena. Even snowed on the way, there was plenty of opportunity for fans to think, wow, it's not that great, I just won't bother going. But it just didn't happen. They turned out in force, made for a cracking atmosphere. But like you say, it could actually backfire on these guys. They served, as I said, they served us up the worst card ever, and they still came in force and paid a lot of money to do so. So, the UFC can only look at that and see it as a market they can sell out with whatever they bring to the table, I guess.
Well, that being said, if you were a fan and you did attend, you won't leave unhappy. That was a good card. I mean, the Cajun Johnson versus Stevie Ray fight might have been the least entertaining fight on the card, but I actually thought it was a very good fight. And I think people watching it on TV, would have thought of it as a good fight. It was a little bit slower, but a very strategic fight. The rest of the card, I thought every fight was fantastic.
For sure. I mean, look, you know what it's like in the back. When I'm at events, I usually start in the back, doing all the interviews with the guys that win. We get to do post-fight scrums with those guys. And then for the main card or the top couple of fights, I get to make my way out of there. They're brought to us in the press conference. So a lot of the fight night, I was in the back. I actually missed a lot of the Stevie Ray, Cajun Johnson fights. We were doing a post-fight interview with that. But from what I did see, it wasn't the worst, I think. I think people were not so happy with the fact that Cajun Johnson was on his bike a lot, using his movement to stay kind of out the way of a lot of Stevie Ray's combinations. It must have been very frustrating for the home crowd to kind of see that. They've been waiting a very long time to see Stevie Ray fight again. And Cajun Johnson actually came with a very good game plan. I personally scored it from what I saw, 29-28 Johnson. But like you were saying there, the rest of the card was absolutely just full of firecrackers, wasn't it? Knockouts galore.
Yeah, knockouts galore. Those two Hail Mary finishes with Leon Edwards and Paul Craig tying the record in the same night, both of them for the longest fight with a finish in three-round history, I guess, in terms of the latest finish, rather. So that was pretty cool, and especially the Paul Craig one. The Paul Craig fight, I mean, he was getting dominated in that fight.
Yeah, no, he certainly was. I mean, let me add to that, the MMA junkie cameraman, I'm going to butcher his second name, Hal Justin. He's a very, he's a very prominent figure, I guess, on the European scene anyway for his photography. He was sat right next to the timekeeper for that fight, and he saw as Paul Craig got the tap, the timekeeper stopped the time on 14 minutes, 59 seconds, and 68 milliseconds.
Wow.
So, crazy.
It shocked me that he tapped out there because that was locked in for maybe a maximum of 4 seconds.
Exactly. And he seemed to be, he wasn't passing out like when it was unapplied, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, he didn't fall or anything. You know, all he had to, if he would have gone out, he would have won the fight. that's the crazy part. He would have gotten submitted technically, but the ref would never have been able to call it.
Exactly. So crazy fight. I have to talk to you about the co-main event because I was probably one of the most vocal people when this rematch got put together, having witnessed the first fight in person in Krakow, Poland.
Yeah, and you weren't alone.
I never wanted to see the Jimmy Manoa versus Jan Błachowicz part two, but what a fight that was. That was one of the fights I was out there cage side for, and it just blew my mind. I was sitting next to Pete Carroll of MMAfighting.com, and we were loving every second of the action. It was up, down. I think Jimmy Manoa was a guy that when he's been hit hard previously, he's gone out. He's been knocked down and he's been knocked out. It was incredibly surprising to see him hit the mat this time off what was quite a devastating combination to actually pick himself back up and get himself back in the fight. I think that's a big moment for Jimmy Manoa, but now he's looking at the fact that he's lost two in a row. He's really out of the mix now.
Light heavyweight. You just need one more win, and then you're back in the mix.
Sure, but who's going to fight Jimmy Manoa coming off two losses? He's a dangerous guy, and people didn't want to fight him when he was on a winning streak. So it's not an easy way back for Jimmy, but he showed character in that fight that he hadn't shown before.
Yeah, I thought that was a really good fight, and I thought Jan Błachowicz, he was going, fighting the type of fight that Manoa usually has great success in, and he was able to win it there. So good on him. It's the second fight that Jimmy Manoa's ever had that's gone to the scorecards, both of which were with Jan Błachowicz. But what I really want to pick your brain about is Liverpool. The card that's coming to Liverpool, a couple fights announced, nothing big other than Darren Till headlining because there's no opponent named for him at this point. But everybody's talking about how crazy it's going to be when Darren fights, and it's Liverpool, and there seems to be this real storied vibe around the city. You know, I'm a big fan of music that came out of Liverpool, and I know how crazy that scene is. I'm not a big fan of football, soccer, whatever you want to call it, and I know Liverpool has a big following, but why is there this kind of mythical aura around the city of Liverpool when it comes to this event? Can you just walk us through that? Why is this a big deal?
Let's think about what UFC Dublin is like. I'm sure you've seen those events, especially that one in 2015 with Conor McGregor versus Diego Brandão. It was almost like a tribe of people turned up to the arena that night. It was the Irish people are extremely good at supporting their own nation. And if you can think about that, but in the context of Liverpool, where it's almost like an unwritten code in Liverpool that they wherever you speak to anyone from Liverpool, they always say we support our own. That's a very common saying that you'll hear about and hear from Liverpudlians. They always say we support our own, and when that gets put into the context of a combat sports of live event, there's nothing to describe it. I've seen plenty of Cage Warriors events that have been staged at the Echo Arena. Paddy Pimblett, normally the focus of attention. I experienced my first little taste of that just about a month ago when Cage Warriors 90 took place at the Echo Arena. It was said to actually be one of the more lesser attended of the Cage Warriors events that have been run in Liverpool, but it was still, it's magical that you can't just describe the intensity and the passion that the Liverpool fans have for their own fighters. It's really something you kind of have to experience in first person. It's almost like when you try and describe that night in Dublin, unless you were there, you just can't put across how special that night was. And I'm heading into May 27th, like just absolutely 100% confident that it's going to exceed that evening in Dublin. I'm 100% confident in that. I think this is going to be off the scales good. I think if I could, express to someone, if they're ever going to go to one mixed martial arts event in their lifetime, UFC Liverpool is the one. And I know the press, from the West, they very, very rarely travel over to Europe for an event. I think if they can convince the higher ups in their companies that if they're to ever send them to one event, UFC Liverpool is going to be the one.
I'm taking some notes right now so I can pitch it later on. Would the UFC be foolish not to sign Paddy Pimblett and give him a favorable matchup for this particular card? And give me some names of some other fighters from Liverpool that they would support that you think we will see on this card.
Yes, I mean, let's take a step back from that, just one step, because at the moment we've got a very, very packed UFC roster, right? There's a lot of guys waiting on the sidelines, always waiting for fights. There's a lot of... So that in itself limits the possibility of new fighters being brought into the organization. Now, Paddy Pimblett fights a lightweight, 155 pounds right now. That's we both know that's an incredibly stacked division right now. So much talent all around the world, and people are only really being brought into the UFC on late notice. You mean Alex Hernandez at UFC 222 is a great example. We've even got Machin Held, who was spoken to over the weekend. He joined ACB. Machin Held is one of the biggest names in European mixed martial arts, and he's having to look elsewhere just to get fights. And that was done with the UFC's blessing. They literally told him, "We can't get you a fight." Now,
So is he still under UFC contract?
No, he's not.
He's not. Okay.
He's been told that with the UFC's blessing to go join ACB.
Okay.
So he's one of the he hasn't had the most successful run in the UFC, but he's coming off a win. So yep. we're now looking at a division which Paddy Pimblett fights in, where it's extremely hard to get fights and it's extremely hard to get signed. The flip side to the argument is he would bring in a tremendous amount of value to that event as a spectacle. I find it very hard to justify why you would have a UFC Liverpool event without Paddy Pimblett. He's beloved in the city. Everyone knows who Paddy Pimblett is. I would argue that more people know who Paddy Pimblett is than Darren Till.
Wow.
That's a crazy thing to say. It's perhaps not true now, given Darren Till's rise in the sport and the amount of promotional build that's been put behind him in the last 6 months. If, before that Donald Cerrone fight, you'd ask a random guy on the street who they knew out of Paddy Pimblett and Darren Till, I'd say it's probably more likely they knew who Paddy Pimblett was. That's how big a star Paddy is in that market. Now, I personally think if you ask me how many people I think are going to get signed for this card, I'd probably say two. I think Pimblett will be one of them. And I think the other is going to be a women flyweight called Molly McCann. Meatball Molly McCann. She's a big personality. She headlined that Cage Warriors card I was talking to you about last month, Cage Warriors 90, above Paddy Pimblett. She's a current Cage Warriors flyweight champion. She's won 7 on the bounce. She's larger-than-life personality. She's almost like the female version of Paddy Pimblett. But the key factor here is that she fights at 125. And that's a division we know in the UFC that needs new talent. It almost needs new personality like, Meatball Molly McCann to come in there and kind of give it...
Any personality, yeah.
Exactly. So If you ask me of anyone right here, right now, I think there's more cards in favor for the UFC signing Monty McCann out of everyone. But I just cannot see a UFC Liverpool event without Paddy Pimblett. And, you know, here's a bit of information that I've not given out, but I was well on top of this story last week in terms of the UFC coming to Liverpool. One of the kind of sources who was helping me kind of out piecing this piece of the puzzle together was a source pretty close to the Cage Warriors camp who were telling me that very quickly they were told to have reconsidered some of their short-term matchmaking for some of their stars, strongly hinting at Paddy Pimblett and Molly McCann, to put kind of put that on ice for the minute, given the quick announcement of UFC Liverpool. So read into that what you want. So Cage Warriors have been told, to ice any plans that they have for those two at the moment. So let's see what happens out of that.
Wow, that's a nice tidbit of information. I appreciate you sharing that with us. And finally, after Leon Edwards beats Peter Sabata, 4:59 of the third round, he goes right after Darren Till. Says Birmingham versus Liverpool, let's go. Is there a rivalry between these two cities? Because as someone sitting here in Canada, I don't know much about it.
No, not so much, to be honest. Really, not so much. It's Manchester and Liverpool, 100%. But not so much Birmingham and Liverpool. It's the Leon thing is weird. It's very difficult to talk about because you look at Leon's resume. It's good. It's impressive. Like, you know, it's got.
It might be a better resume than Till's, in all honesty.
It is 100%. But Leon, his difficulty was his call out on Saturday. I thought was very limited, in the sense that he just said, "I want to fight Darren Till." When they boil it down to the nuts and bolts, "I want to fight Darren Till." We then get him backstage, and of course you want to hear about the why. Where's the why in this? It's all right to say you want to fight someone, but you have to have a why. And when we asked him, why do you actually want to fight Darren Till, apart from the fact that you're going to get, you know, good publicity out of it, there wasn't anything behind it. You need to almost build in a story. You need to give, do you remember Nate Diaz called out Conor McGregor?
Yeah, had so juice.
I want to fight Conor McGregor. It was you've taken everything I've worked for, with a few expletives mixed in there. But it gave him a reason. It gave him a reason for having a problem with Conor, and there was a story there. But with Leon and Till, it's very limited. It's very limited. It's just I want to fight him.
Yeah, and further to that, he was just on Ariel Helwani's show, the MMA Hour, and was saying that he just hopes the UFC gives him a top 10 opponent next. He really wasn't like a dog on a bone when it comes to that fight with Darren Till and wanting that fight and why he wanted it. So I think that's a great point you bring up.
Yeah, and it was an issue all evening, really. There was very limited in terms of, if you look at some of the backstage kind of talk after the fight, there was very limited. Volkov wasn't really saying much. Leon Edwards wasn't really saying much. It was a funny point. And I want the best for Leon. I think he's a great representative of mixed martial arts in our country. But, who knows who he gets next. Maybe he will get on that Liverpool card. As I said, I think I tweeted out on Saturday. I did speak to Darren very quickly in the back. He was being pulled every which way, as you can imagine. But he came up to me and just said, "What did I think about the call out myself?" And I gave him my opinion. And he just said the words to me, "I'm looking up the ladder, mate." And he just didn't really seem interested in it. So I think it's a option. I put out an update yesterday just in terms of sources I have telling me that a lot of the top contenders in the division really are kind of running away from Darren at the moment, for lack of a better phrase. And it's an alternative, but it's not a very much sought after alternative, I don't think, from the UK fan base.
Yeah, I saw your post on MMAnit.com. I recommend people go and read it. It's all the different potential opponents and where they're at right now, where they stand. It's a very helpful piece of information. Jim, thanks so much for joining us today on the TSN MMA show. It's great to pick your brain about the other side of the pond and what's going on in terms of mixed martial arts there, and what's going on with the different Cage Warriors fighters that could be in the UFC, some information about them, and I can't thank you enough.
Great stuff. And thanks for having me. And no doubt I'll speak to you very soon and see you in Brooklyn.
Yes, sir. A couple weeks away. That's going to be a great card.
It's going to be very exciting. I'll see you there.
That was Jim Edwards. Great insight from him. And he dropped a really interesting nugget there that he had heard that Cage Warriors had told Paddy Pimblett and McCann not to, they had told Cage Fighters not to book those guys. So those are two huge Liverpudlians that could be on that card. Paddy Pimblett especially, I think, is a no-brainer. If they can give him kind of an easy, beatable opponent and build his profile up, that would be a good move. Now, I will say that when I spoke to Jim, Paddy Pimblett had not yet appeared on the MMA Hour with Ariel Helwani, where he said that he was going to be on vacation during that card. So we'll see if maybe the UFC can lure him out of vacation. But he says he doesn't need the UFC to succeed in the MMA landscape. We have seen Ben Askren not compete in the UFC, Fedor not compete in the UFC. Does it tarnish their legacy? Who knows? But I think Paddy Pimblett on that Liverpool card would make a whole lot of sense. And if the UFC can provide the dollars and cents, that it would be a no-brainer for Paddy Pimblett.
Yeah, I just think the MMA in Europe is just improving in general, which is nice to see, because traditionally, from a combat sports look, it was North America, which was the hotbed for MMA, and it was Europe that had kickboxing. And it was actually the opposite. But it seems like in every city the UFC is going to, and now, you know, with Conor in Ireland and the UK, seems to be that new hotbed, and it's exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. It's starting to gain a lot of steam. And the good thing about it is all those cards do well. Like, the cards in Scotland are loud and crazy,
yeah,
and they
fun.
Put Scottish fighters
yeah.
on, and it's a lot of fun. The card in London, was the crowd was
going
crazy.
They got to bring
crazy.
That soccer mentality yeah. in there, and it's fun. Cheering and chanting. And
you know what I like most about it, though, Joe?
What's that?
The time it starts and ends.
Oh, I know.
From a North
it's
American
nice.
Perspective.
You get to go to bed
yes.
early.
Yes.
You know?
I had a date night with my wife. I came
yeah.
home. It was great.
That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
Did a whole nice romantic ordeal.
Yeah.
Yeah. I MacGyvered a date night.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
You have to make up for it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, because I'm rarely home on Saturday nights. I'm usually out covering, watching these events.
And,
yeah.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
So thank you to the UFC for these UK events. And according to Jim, actually, in an article that he wrote, he says that the UFC is actually leaning, even though this is going to be a televised card on Fox Sports 1 and on TSN here in Canada, they're leaning towards putting it on at a UK time. So main card starts at 9 or 10 p.m. local time.
Yeah.
So it'd be, I guess, 5-6 hours earlier yeah. here, which is smart.
I was so dedicated. I was literally watching on a phone while I was driving home from Montreal. So that's how committed I was. And especially, I had to watch a Hakeem Duwadu fight. I couldn't not watch it, so I had to watch it while I was driving home.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So what did you think of Hakeem?
Well, there's not much to think. I mean, yeah. the fight lasted a total of 39 seconds. He got tagged really early. And Danny Henry, credit to him, he was relentless. He grabbed the neck,
yeah.
wouldn't let go, got the tap.
Yeah,
and,
smart move.
Yeah.
He had to. You can't give Hakeem any time to do anything.
Well, it's tough. You know, I'm writing an article for TSN.ca because a lot of people thought Hakeem was the next Canadian hope kind of thing in the
Which
UFC.
Which he still probably
and he still
is,
could be,
right?
Still could be. And I reached out to a bunch of different Canadians who cover MMA and got their takes. They each wrote me a paragraph on who they think is like has the best chances
the best
of
future.
Being yeah the best future as a Canadian. My answer is probably going to surprise people in terms of who could get the next title shot as a Canadian, but well, that's neither here nor there. And this was of course outside of GSP because we don't
okay.
know what the future
yeah,
for
let me
GSP
hear it.
Is. Yeah, I guess I can reveal it on the show. Okay. I think the next Canadian that's going to fight for a title in the UFC is.
I'm waiting.
Alexis Davis for the strawweight title.
Well, I can see that.
Or
yeah.
the flyweight title, sorry, the flyweight title.
It's the easiest of the divisions to get.
Yeah,
in,
well, what's
right?
she ranked right now, right? She is ranked in the women's flyweight, or where are the women's flyweight ratings here?
I don't think they have them.
They
no,
have them. They have the flyweight rankings. Where are they?
Oh, flyweight. She's fourth.
She's fourth, right?
Yeah.
So if Shevchenko ends up beating Nico Montano, which is the fight they're going to make, and I think that it's almost a no-brainer that Valentina is going to win. Who's ranked 2 and 3? Like who's ahead?
Alexis. You have Lauren Murphy at 3.
Really, Lauren Murphy's ranked ahead of Alexis Davis. Okay.
And number 2 is Eubanks.
Okay, so
Soraya.
Eubanks. Sajara.
Sajara.
So Eubanks and Murphy are fighting in the coming months. That fight's lined up. So whoever wins that fight is probably going to be next in line for Shevchenko.
Yeah.
The winner of Shevchenko.
So two,
Montano.
Three fights can.
So
Davis
all Alexis Davis
there?
Needs to do is beat like one or two opponents, and she'll be in the mix. Now, does that mean that she's going to be the champion? It's actually a good match. Her versus Shevchenko is actually a solid matchup for her, just from an X's and O's standpoint.
Hmm.
Will she win? I don't know. I doubt it. I mean, I think that she would be at least a 4-1 underdog.
Yeah,
against
definitely
against
a big
Shevchenko.
Underdog.
But if that fight goes to the ground, Alexis Davis can beat anybody on the ground in that division.
Hmm.
She's just way better on the ground than I think anybody in that division right now.
And I guess
now.
She's the highest-ranked Canadian in any of the divisions?
Highest-ranked Canadian in any of the divisions. And that's really all it takes. And another guy that I think has a good future and could be a champion is Arjun Buller. Because with wrestling in that heavyweight division, his striking is getting better and better, trained at AKA, you know,
Yeah, he strikes with my friend too. In BC, Jay Johnsey.
Yeah. So that's where he trains most of the time, is out in BC. But he also goes out to AKA and trains there. Just with the wrestling base, he's won a medal at the Pan Am Games, and just with that kind of background at heavyweight, you're in good shape.
Yeah, I still like Chad Lapreece. I think he's going to do well. We got to hang out this weekend, which was nice. We followed each other for so long, and it was actually really cool to see some like us Canadian martial artists together. We had Mark Hominick there cornering as well. You got Sam Stout, Chad Lapreece. So you got like all of us together, and it was pretty cool to have conversations with those guys.
It's like the dream team.
Yeah, Chad Lapreece, he's fighting, I can't remember his opponent's name he has.
It's booked already, yeah.
Yeah, but he's fighting a Henry Hooft pressure-style kickboxer. So I think he's going to come down to Bazooka Kickboxing. So when he's down, I think we should just put him on the show and he can sit in with us.
Yeah, let's have him come in. That would be great.
Yeah, we'll hopefully plan it out that way.
So Chad Lapreece.
Yeah, he's fighting a Dutch-style kickboxer, so... Yeah, I like their team.
That's what you want. That'll help. That'll give you some good strategies for him.
Yeah
Vicente Luque. That's a tough opponent for him. Vicente's been on a roll.
Yeah, striker-based, right?
Yeah, May 19th. Yeah, striking-based. Really, really tough opponent, actually, for Chad Lapreece. He's won 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Five of his last six. His last loss is to Leon Edwards.
Okay.
But he beat Nico Price, who was another good prospect, so... That's a tough matchup for Chad. So we'll see how that goes. But with Bazooka Kickboxing,
if he comes, it's easy work.
Yeah, exactly, easy work. we did our picks. Also, is there anything else we wanted to discuss from this card before we move on?
The Hail Mary submission was pretty cool from Craig. You got to talk about that.
Well, that's what I want to ask you about. So you hear the whatever, 10 seconds left.
I know
that was locked
ask.
On for maybe 4 seconds.
Yeah.
You go out.
You go to sleep.
That's what I thought. Now
you have to go to sleep.
Now the question is, what was his corner yelling? Because with 4 seconds, I would say Craig, we should watch the video back, but I would say Craig had it locked on with maybe 4 seconds remaining. 4 or 5 seconds.
Yeah, about that. Yeah.
And
go to sleep. Come on.
Yeah. I think so.
Sleep.
And I mean, Jim Edwards, who we just spoke to, said that there was a photographer from MMA Junkie that was sitting at the scorer's table, at the timekeeper's table, rather. It was near the timekeeper's table. And they hit the button to stop the fight at 4:59.68. So he was like 20 milliseconds away, or 40 milliseconds away.
You had that 1 second in you. And if not... You wake up and it's over anyways, and you lost anyways.
Yeah.
Or it's a decision.
No, if he goes out and he wins. If he goes out and the ref doesn't stop it, because it's milliseconds, right?
Yeah, you win.
Yeah. It's crazy because he won that. He won all three of those rounds.
He definitely won all three. Yeah.
Yeah.
Would have been 30-26. It was totally crazy.
Yeah.
You know, he landed 90 of 130 strikes, and Paul Craig only landed 34. Like, I mean, just dominant.
You know what?
Got dominated.
I'll say this. I watched the tape on Ankalaev. Beforehand, and I noticed that there were some holes in his game. I didn't think Craig was going to be the one to exploit them, but and I don't know if he did exploit them. Obviously, he was able to submit him. And Paul Craig, really, the only path that he had, and I said this before the fight, was to throw up submissions from his back, because Ankalaev, I knew, was going to take him down. And I thought, and Craig is very crafty off his back. He's one of the most crafty submission guys in the light heavyweight division, and he was able to pull it off. So good on him.
Hey, good on you for calling that out, too.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Pat myself
on the back. Yeah, there you go. Your analyst skills are stepping up.
Submission was 10 to 1.
You'll have to be doing the whole show on yourself, asking yourself questions.
Well, that's what I'm doing with
Aaron,
my Periscope.
What do you think is going to happen?
That's what I'm doing with my Periscope.
Yeah,
that's what it is.
Yourself?
So the first fight on this card that got scrapped, it was Nad Nirimani versus Nasrat Haqparast. So I'm breaking it down on Periscope right before the card's going to start. I finished the Periscope, and the fight was canceled while I was doing the Periscope, like 20 minutes before it was supposed to happen, because one of the guys had an eye infection.
Yep.
So that was unfortunate. And another thing I did on the Periscope, if you want to go back and watch it, was Jim, who I just spoke to, and my other friend Sandu, who's actually moving to Canada, writes for MMA Junkie, and he's from the UK. And all the people that were going over to the UK to cover it were all eating Nando's chicken. And I'd never tried Nando's chicken. I didn't realize it was like the Swiss Chalet of the UK. Yeah. So I go out of my way. There's one like 15 minutes from here.
Yeah.
On the way over to pick it up.
It's quick from here.
Well, that's what I didn't know. So I went to the one at like Markham, whatever.
Oh,
I went to
the, one 15
minutes
away.
There's one at Kennedy that's 3 minutes from here.
I go so probably once a week at least.
To Nando's?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I'd never tried it.
Right after, because sometimes I go work out at the LA Fitness there.
Yeah,
and then
right
I'll go quickly eat at Nando's, and then I go to Bazooka Kickboxing.
Yeah, yeah. So I tried it. It was good.
And
it was very good. I liked it.
Yeah, what did you get?
I should get it for my family. My wife loves that kind
half
of food.
Half chicken, quarter chicken?
I got a quarter chicken, hot quarter chicken, and then I got the Nando's, the peri-peri chips.
Okay.
The chips, and then I got the spicy rice, which I wasn't a fan of.
Okay.
Wouldn't recommend the spicy rice.
Good. No, I love it there.
It was good. Yeah, I asked Sandu what to get, and that's what he told me to get, so I just,
yeah,
whatever he told me, that's what I got.
Yeah, they have their french fries with the peri-peri fries, and they have peri-peri nuts or something.
And what sauce level do you get?
Medium usually.
I got the hot, and I thought it was like a 6 to 7 out of 10 in terms
of
hotness.
I gotta go hotter next time.
Yeah, get the hot. It's not it won't blow you away in terms of heat. So there it is. If you wanted to watch me try Nando's for the first time,
you can
watch it. I did it right at the end of the broadcast. See my I should go back and watch that. I'm interested to see what my face looked like. So we did our picks again, and both were unsuccessful. You had Verdum straight, I believe.
I had it a straight,
and I had Verdum and Edwards. And I got the Edwards leg, but
50%.
But the Verdum leg didn't come through.
No money for that.
Yep. So now I'm at 89.40. You're at 60.25. You think one of us is going to go bankrupt by the end of the year? What's going to happen?
I don't know. I got to step up, though.
Absolutely. I think we both do.
I got to start picking something. I don't know. I was doing too many parlays and I was losing, but I got to come up with something.
Yeah. Well, parlays are parlays for a reason. You know, you take two of the bigger favorites and you lower the price a little bit.
But the problem is I play catch up now. I was doing so well and I was. Now I'm trying to play catch up, and it's.
You were throwing some Hail Marys. You were
I was trying.
Trying for big.
And now I'm trying to be safe.
Yeah.
So, new change in strategy for me.
Yeah, absolutely. Is there anything else? Anything left for us to discuss here? I'm not sure what we're going to talk about next week. Hopefully, they have some fight announcements planned. But the one thing I do like about it is we're 3 weeks away now from UFC 223, and I think that this. You know, I was excited to watch this London card because there were 2 weeks off, or 1 week off, 1 week off. Now there's going to be, I think, 2 weekends off from here.
Yeah.
And I think people are just going to be salivating by the time that 223 comes around.
Yeah, see, I think it's crazy now because everybody's complaining that there's a show every week.
Yeah.
And, oh, my God, how are we going to watch it all? Then when you have a week off, everyone gets mad because they're like, now what are we going to do?
Exactly.
We got nothing to do.
I like the idea of having 2 weeks off before every pay-per-view, though. I think that if you want to build a pay-per-view, it's a smart move.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, so... We'll see how this one goes. But I honestly think that that's going to be a card where people are going to be really stoked for it. But I was also looking at a lot of the matchups at UFC 223, and I think a lot of them are going to go the distance. Like, it seems like there are a lot of really good evenly matched fights where...
Yeah, I can see it.
Yeah, like I can see the main event potentially going the distance, although that one I'm not too confident about. I think Joanna Rose has a good shot of going the distance.
Agree.
I think the Joe Lozon fight could go the distance with Grootsmacher. I think that Chiesa Pettis can go the distance. Yeah. Like, there are a lot of fights.
You were calling out possibly a Chiesa submission.
I think Chiesa can win that fight in any which way. I think he could knock Pettis out. I think he could get a sub. And I think he could win by decision. I think that Chiesa... This is going to be a good test for Pettis, let's just say that.
Yeah.
I think that we're going to see where Pettis is at.
Just going to glue to him, probably.
Yeah, because Pettis has not looked like Anthony Pettis for a while.
Yeah, things have changed with him.
Yeah,
guys
but
are understanding his striking.
He's only been fighting high caliber opponents, save for Jim Miller, who's at the tail end of his career. But you know, he's not getting layups here. He's got Max Holloway, Dustin Poirier.
Yeah.
Who else has he lost to? Let's just say that there haven't been any easy matchups for old Anthony Pettis.
Yeah, I even like Felder. I think Felder's going to make some big noise against
Aquinta. That's a good fight. That's a very even fight that could go the distance and could be a slugfest.
Yeah.
So it's going to be. I think that when you look at matchups sometimes, when I looked at this card in London the past week, I was like, a lot of these fights are going to end inside the distance. When you look at the pay-per-views, they're often very evenly matched, and that can lead to a lot of long decision fights. And
Absolutely.
That's what happened last year in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Last year in Brooklyn, there was, I think, one fight that ended inside the distance. It was Tim Boach and Jacare.
Yeah.
And I think that's it.
You got to
think. Dana White thought that card was awful.
On these big cards, the best fighters are being matched. It's your pay-per-view. And on a big fight like Ferguson and Khabib, these are evenly matched fights. And those are the ones that you have to be a little bit more technical. You got to be a little bit more strategic. You can't make those stupid little errors and mistakes. You have to be more, you know, focused. And I think that's why you're going to get a lot of decisions. I think you're right.
Yeah, and you could argue that Ferguson and Khabib are the two best fighters in the UFC.
Yeah.
Like, they're both on crazy
win streaks.
They
got to be hesitant. They can't just go in and just rush it
you never know.
Mistakes.
Tony Ferguson might do that.
Maybe. I don't think so.
Because Tony Ferguson, I think, is going to welcome Khabib into his guard. Like, I think if Khabib takes him down, if Ferguson comes out guns a-blazing, throwing strikes, and he gets taken down, I don't think Ferguson's going to be worried. I think Ferguson can do a lot off his back.
If I'm Ferguson, I'm trying to keep my space. I'm trying to catch Khabib coming in, and then I'm going to move my feet. You always want to keep hitting and moving, especially in the earlier rounds. And then maybe in the later rounds, if you want to take that chance, get aggressive. If you go to the ground, good. But I think Ferguson's got to stay, keep his distance, and fight long as possible.
Do you want my prediction for what's going to happen?
Let me hear it.
With the exact finish, okay. Tony Ferguson by darts choke.
Okay.
Let's keep the tape.
Yeah, we'll replay it.
Yeah, let's keep the tape.
We'll replay
and
it.
We'll play it going into the show afterwards if it happens. But that's my prediction for the fight.
All right. You know, 25-0 against 25-3. Both experienced. Yeah,
we'll see what happens.
All right.
We've got a late surprise on the show for everybody. Wasn't expecting to have this booked for this week, but it looks like it's come through. We have Arjun Buller on the show, heavyweight, and he looks like he's going to be, like I mentioned earlier, one of the big Canadians going forward. And in that heavyweight division, when you have the wrestling, you have a lot going in your favor. And he joins us now on the TSN MMA show. All right, I'm now joined by Arjun Buller, big Canadian standout in the UFC. A couple of Canadians fought this past weekend, one successful, one unsuccessful. We saw Hakeem Dawodu fall, unfortunately, the hands of Danny Henry. You know, one of the guys that people touted as the next big Canadian star in the UFC. Did you get a chance to watch those fights, Arjun?
For sure. I watched a Canadian boys fight. I watched some of the heavyweight action. And, I was... You know, I've known Hakeem from the regional scene. You know, being a top prospect out of Canada, he's got some unbelievable kickboxing skills. So I was excited to see him get out there and compete. And unfortunately, it didn't go his way. But, you know, the opponent he had, that guy was tough, man. He sunk in that guillotine. He would not let that thing go.
Yeah, absolutely. He sees that opportunity. I mean, 39 seconds to beat a guy that's considered one of the top prospects, not just from Canada, but one of the top prospects in that division across the board. If you looked at prospect lists, you know, over the last little bit, he was always right up there. So good on Danny Henry for seizing the moment, and we can only hope that Hakeem bounces back in his next fight.
Yeah, you know, there's two ways of going about it. Either he can get down on himself and stay down there, or he can use it as an opportunity to come back and prove what kind of character he has, and I'm sure he'll choose a second option. He's been a champion and had success for many, many years, so I'm looking forward to him bouncing back.
Well, a lot of these Canadians are in pretty deep divisions. Your division, however, seems like it could be wide open, and a lot of young talent coming up. I know that you're almost 32 years of age, but when you see a guy like Alexander Volkov get a win this weekend, he's 29. Tai Tuivasa is starting to do a lot of things. He's, I think, 25 years old. Curtis Blaydes, I believe, is 25 or 26 years old. Is it nice to see the heavyweight division get a little bit refreshed with a win by Volkov?
You know what? I could care less about the other heavyweights. I focus on what I've got to do. I will say, you know, the pioneers, the legends have been around for a long time. The guys, you know, you watched, you know, before you got into this sport have been dominating up until now even. But I do believe, you know, it's on people like myself to show them the door. They're not going to leave otherwise. And you know what? They've been great for a long, long time. But it is a new generation, a new era. And I'm excited to be a part of that and make my mark.
What do you think is realistic for you by the end of the year in terms of ranking?
I don't care about ranking. I don't look at that stuff. That's for fans. You know, any given day, anyone can beat anyone. If we went by ranking, then there wouldn't be any fights. You may as well just strap your belt around the number one guy all the time. So for me, I will be in a position to fight for that title. That's my goal. I will be undefeated, and we will have India opened up as a market and eyed up for 2019. Those are my goals.
Do you want them to throw you into deep water soon? Like if you get a win against Adam Wazorik in Glendale, I guess next month, are you hoping they really test you in that next fight?
You know what? I don't get involved with that. I just train, man. I leave my management and the UFC to get together for that type of stuff, and I just stay ready. I will continue to get better. That I can guarantee you, and I'll be ready for whoever comes across the cage for me at any time.
So speaking about that card in Fox next month, it's in Glendale, Arizona. You were just in Arizona, and I asked you off air if you know if that was a tour set up by the UFC, but no, it was a tour set up by Arjun Buller.
Yeah, you know what? I got great management at CAA. We got together and we made that happen. You know, it was a great weekend. You know, got out to the Phoenix Suns Warriors game. You know, Coach Triano, he's a Vancouver guy. So we were able to get that thing organized. Brooks is a CAA talent as well. So, you know, it was family all the way around. And aside from that, you know, the local Indian community came together. They set up a whole bunch of media for me. Good Morning Arizona, Fox, all that stuff. And then I got out to the local temple and met the community leaders, got them all revved up for next month. So we're primed for a fantastic April 14th, man.
What compels you to do that, to I guess, set up your own media, to go out there and get yourself out there? That's something that you're doing very consciously, I imagine.
Well, for sure, man. It's, you know, it's something I've been accustomed to, being an athlete, you know, being a part of teams, you know, even as a wrestler. And even now, you know, the company or the national team, they take care of the whole team. But you have to be your own priority and make things happen for yourself. That's always been my approach, not only to this media stuff and promotions and that type of thing, but in terms of competition too. You can't rely on other people to set you up for success. So you have to have that philosophy in life, and that's what I continue to live by.
So you're out there, you're at the Suns game, you get to meet Devin Booker and all of these other members of the team. What do they say to someone who's a UFC fighter? I imagine that given the sport of basketball, it's, you know, a somewhat physical sport, but it's not really a sport where you know, guys are hitting each other, so to speak, like football or hockey. I imagine they have a pretty big degree of respect for what you do.
For sure, man. You know, those guys were great. I was happy to kind of be there for the shoot around and then the game, and, you know, kind of see what they do and how they prepare. I actually met with one of their mental coaches there as well. She's a fantastic lady. Picked her brain a little bit as to what kind of pointer she gives to the players and what kind of approach. And the players were awesome. You know, Phoenix and Arizona is a hotbed for MMA. A lot of those guys do that in cross training, off-season training, and they're familiar with the sport. And they will be in attendance on April 14th. That's what they told me.
Well, that's excellent. That's great to hear. I mean, I imagine a lot of the players will be at that if they can. I think the season should be over by then. I don't think the Suns...
That's what they said.
They should be able to attend, which is great, especially in their backyard in Glendale. So that must be exciting for you. If people haven't checked it out on social media, there's lots of pictures of you with Devin Booker, and they give you a custom Buller jersey, as I pointed out on Twitter. The second Buller jersey in the NBA, with Sim Buller being the first, playing a couple games for the Kings. A behemoth of an individual at 7'6", 380 pounds, which is...
Toronto boy.
Yeah, Toronto boy. And I guess he's not related to you, is he? Buller's a pretty common Indian last name, correct?
It's fairly common, but you know what, we're all related, we're all Indians, man, and every single Sikh has the middle name Singh, so we are connected one way or another, anyone in the world that's a Sikh. So but I'm not directly related to those guys, but they're a fantastic family, the brothers, the sister, the parents, all of them great people.
So what's this camp been like? Have you just been spending your time out west in Vancouver, or have you gone to AKA at all? What's your, I guess, itinerary for training looking like?
Yeah, no, it's good, man. You know, I've had good training here, and I've stayed in town for this one. You know, I had a birth of my child recently, I planned to stay in town because I was able to bring guys in. We got Jared Kilkenny in town. We got Anthony Hamilton, who fought Adam his last fight. He's coming into town. He fights a week after me in Washington. So we got good guys, good bodies, great coaching. This camp will be out of Vancouver. And then I'm hoping on getting down to south of the border after this fight and get DC ready for the Stipe fight and maybe get on that card myself.
Well, yeah, that would be really cool. I mean, that's a card you want to be on. That's International Fight Week. And if they honestly want it to be International Fight Week, who better to have on it than you?
If you want a nation of over a billion people and really make a push, it makes sense. So we will cross that bridge when the time is right. But I intend on being on that training and that camp anyhow. And if we're able to get the fight lined up too, that'd be a bonus.
Do they have Fight Pass in India? Is it accessible there?
What they have is Sony India is the platform that shows all UFC content. It's free, accessible to all. And for the cards, they only show the main cards, though. They don't show prelims. So the last fight, they weren't able to catch me. I'm hoping we're able to to rectify that this time around, since I'm fighting on Vaisakhi, which is an Indian holiday. You know, a lot of people will be tuning in. So we'll see how that shakes out.
So your opponent, Adam Wozorek, you mentioned you're bringing in Anthony Hamilton, who Wozorek, I guess, beat by unanimous decision last time around. What are you hoping that Anthony's going to be able to teach you regarding your opponent?
I believe it was a split decision. I could be wrong. But more than anything, you know, he's been in there with this guy. So he'll know, you know, where we're at and where Adam will be at. He gets a good feel that way. And aside from that, he's a quality big guy. So, you know, it's you're able to kind of get two different factors with him, and I'm excited to welcome him into Vancouver.
All right, Arjun. Well, thanks so much for being on the show. I have an article coming out later this week on TSN.ca about promising Canadians. And, you know, with Hakeem losing, not that Hakeem can't bounce back, but I guess different Canadians that are in competition and are going to be competitive in their division. I think you are certainly among them, given that the heavyweight division seemingly is wide open, and you should be able to get to the top fairly quickly if you get matched up with the right guys.
We are going right up the middle. I guarantee you that.
That's excellent. Well, happy to hear that, Arjun. Looking forward to your fight. That's a great card. If you want to tune in, that's going to be on TSN. It's the UFC on Fox. The prelims will be on TSN. The main card will be on TSN, as well as CTV2 in Canada. So we're hoping that you're either on the prelims or the main card so us Canadians can get a chance to watch you.
Yep. You know what? I appreciate all the support I get across Canada. You know, all the fans, I appreciate all that love. Tune in for sure and continue building this momentum. It's going to be a fun ride.
All right, Arjun. Well, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
All right, Joe. Well, that was a lot of fun. I know we were supposed to have Darren Till on the show.
Yeah.
But he said he couldn't do it today. I know he's got a lot going on right now after what happened.
Crazy.
So he said, all right, mate, we'll do it next week. That's like a proper British accent. He doesn't have that
Did
accent.
Did he swear at this time to you or no?
No swearing.
No swearing.
No swearing on my correspondence with Darren Till.
Okay. Yeah, he was going off with those the bombs on air.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was good. I like it.
Swearing is different in the UK. It's a lot more free and liberal.
Yeah.
They have swearing just on regular TV, on the Beeb, on the BBC.
Yeah, even in the guys from New Zealand and they all like their words.
My favorite is Mark Hunt during his interviews.
Yeah.
He uses the C word, but then also says shucks a lot. He's like, I mean shucks.
Yeah.
These guys are using steroids, shucks.
Yeah, the four-letter C word, they only use it in everything. Like, we have some glory fighters, and they can't help
at Adesanya,
it.
Yeah.
Adesanya, the same way. He actually made shirts that
say
good C. And then even even the guys from Glory, the New Zealand guys, just always.
How do you go from shucks to that word though?
Like, it's, I don't know.
That's like the whole spectrum right there. The very left end, when you teach your kid to say, to the word, if you heard your kid say, you'd wash his mouth out with soap if it was still appropriate to do so.
And if you ask any female, that's probably the worst word you can call a female.
But if you ask a female in the UK,
it's just
might
like,
be different
because
it's used a lot more liberally there.
Yeah, true. So, yeah, don't use it here, though.
No.
Definitely don't use it here.
Yeah, absolutely not. So, tsn.ca/UFC. If you go later this week, you'll see a column I'm writing on up-and-coming Canadians in the UFC, who has the brightest future, who could be the next to challenge for a title. I asked a lot of different people to cover MMA, James Lynch, colleague of mine, Adam Martin, as well as, you know, Alex Lee from MMA Fighting, a lot of different people, what they thought about that. And of course, you can go to YouTube, look up Joseph Valtellini, and learn how to do what Tom Dukinwa did to Tarion Ware this week.
But better.
Yeah. All you have to do is watch YouTube and
that's
good.
That's it. And you know what? Even being at the TKO show, and a lot of the fighters came up to me and said, hey, I learned a lot from your channel. Like, hey, those draw attacks and those low kicks, I watched, you know, you do it. And then I watched your channel. So I'm getting tags and videos of people saying, hey, look at my fight. I learned this from your channel. Like, so it's starting to really make an impact on a lot of people's career and training. And you know, keep it up. Keep following.
Speaking of up-and-coming Canadians, TJ Laramie looked very good in that main event.
Yeah, well, I thought he's signed to the UFC in my eyes. I think someone mentioned that he could be into the UFC anytime, but 20 years old,
there's
experience,
there are no Canadian
incredible cards
that are signed up just yet.
So they're probably waiting for that.
Yeah, so I think that the UFC is probably going to see where, like, I wouldn't be surprised if he takes one more fight with TKO, and then July, August rolls around, whenever they're going to have another card in Canada. And I think they're doing a couple of them at the end of the year, because usually they do three or four in a year, and there are none scheduled up until July.
They're probably waiting for that one opportunity, but the kid's ready, man.
He looked awesome. He's beating guys, international opponents. He beat this Nogueira, who
he's like 25-6 or something.
Yeah, good, older, a lot of experience, great ground. And Laramie can mix it up wherever he wants. He's, his wrestling's good.
Won, I would say he won every round of that fight, or close.
I think he lost one.
Yeah,
I think
one
it was
round
a four,
where he was, where I was Nogueira got his back.
He got his back. But yeah, but kid's talented. 20 years old. Like, I mean, yeah, like those, that's just incredible. Like, it's just to see him. But yeah, and we're going to see Tariq Ishmael, hopefully.
In the UFC by the end of the year?
I don't know about the end of the year, but
needs time, but yeah.
No, I don't think he needs time. I think he just needs to continue to build a highlight for the UFC to find. He's ready.
That takes time, a long time ago. It takes time to build the highlight reel.
Yeah, but I posted on Instagram his clips. It'll speak for itself.
All right.
Yeah, it'll speak for itself.
Give Rogan a call. You can play that card.
That's it. I'm telling you right now.
You need a late replacement in the
UFC?
You
heard it here. I've seen talent
What's his record now?
He's 3-0 in MMA.
3-0. Okay.
Yeah. 3-0
What's the kickboxing record? Does he have an official kickboxing record?
I got to ask him, but I think it's, I don't know what his base is.
Like 96-2?
No, he's got, literally, I think he's got somewhere close to 50 kickboxing Muay Thai fights. And his last fight before this was a pro boxing match. So, I mean, he can do
it. Run the gamut.
And he's one of these guys that doesn't get hit. Our distance control, our footwork, the way we can, ability to switch stances. He has the full ability to, and not many fighters can do it. Like, what's in my brain? He can execute by moving his footwork, his angles. He just needs a little bit, few tweaking points, and you're going to see one of the best, you know, featherweights that there's going to be, and I can see it.
Yeah, you can go to YouTube and learn how to be just like that.
Just like him.
All right. Well, Joe, and of course, Bazooka MMA.
Bazooka Kickboxing MMA, 680 Progress Avenue, and big spot, big place, and you can learn from me. I teach, you know, I'm there 4 times a week. We have the best trainers. Matt Embry teaches Muay Thai, you know, myself teaching, so we have some of the best guys around.
What's the promotion this week if you mention the TSN MMA show at Bazooka MMA Kickboxing?
What do you want? What do you think?
I don't know, like a t-shirt or something?
Yeah, there you go.
20% off for your first 3 months or something?
Yeah, let's go. Let's go with the t-shirt. Let's get some gear. I got some new gear. That you can buy at bazookasquad.com.
The 20% off the first 3 months is a no-go?
I don't know. I got to punch it in the computer. That's my business partner's side.
Yeah,
so I can't
offer
that.
You can give away
right
the
away.
Shirts, just not the discounts.
Well, I just don't know how to do it. So if I knew, I got to speak to my
business
manager.
You can upgrade it to green
manager.
Belt right away if you sign up.
Yeah.
Name drop us.
There you go.
That you won't. That doesn't happen.
There's no promotion like that. You get free low kicks if you come in today.
All right. Know? Yeah, free one-on-one tutorial with Joe.
Yeah, where you just got to sit there and I get to hit you.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah,
well, you just cost yourself some business.
No, you know what? It's crazy, Aaron. It sounds stupid to say, but when I get asked a lot to hit people. Mm-hmm. People want to be hit by like someone. They're like, "Hey, man, can you just kick my leg? I want to feel what a low
idea.
Kick feels
I've
like."
I've never asked you that. You did show me a demo upstairs at Tim Hortons.
I almost gave it to you today.
But warned me. I didn't ask you. You said, "Okay, I'm going to show you where you should land." And I was like, "Okay, well, since he's volunteering, he's not going to hit me that hard."
I basically told you I was going to do it anyways. If you said no, I was going to do it anyways. So, but yeah, like I get asked a lot. They're like, "Let me just give me one. You know, maybe 30%." I was like, "Nah, my 30% is going to do it."
Yeah.
And then I was like, "All right, kick my leg now." Then they kick my leg. I'm like, be careful, we're going to hurt your shin because they're not used to it. So, yeah, it's pretty funny. It's one of my party tricks.
All right.
Yeah, that's just a low kick.
Not the best party for you're not coming to my kid's second birthday, I'll tell you.
You never
that
know. I can be beside the clown and I can be given low kicks.
Get one of your guys to dress up as a clown and you just beat him up.
Yeah, there you go.
Kids would love it.
Yeah, see?
When my kid turns 8.
Yeah, he's into martial arts, your son, so why not?
Yeah, he is. Well, he's taking a bit of a hiatus right now.
Okay.
But we'll see how that goes.
Which is good.
Yeah. All right, Joe. We'll be back next week. I'm not sure what we're going to talk about. We'll have to see what happens from now until next week. But, you know, the world of MMA never sleeps.
We'll find something.
All right. See you next week.
Thanks for listening to the TSN MMA Show. For all the latest UFC news, visit tsn.ca/UFC.